You are listening to episode number 276 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Wait,
birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world serves its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Beat it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Bite down. High wire and a fire. Representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down. My team reporters baffle Trump, tethered crop. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Uh-oh, overflow, population common poop, what it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World serves its own needs, listen to your heartbeat. Dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Right, you patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, bright. Light feeling, pretty sight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. To another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I'm your host, Ben, a.k.a. the Marvelous Iggy. Joining me, as always, is the man who will die at the hands of Thanos next Friday, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Wait. You said I'm going to... What do you mean I'm going to die at Thanos? What does that mean?
Bitch, I want to live. You're the sacrificial lamb.
I didn't agree to that. That's not my... Is that my contract? That's not my contract. What is that?
I'm Mark Zuckerberg. You read the terms of service.
Mark
Zuckerberg. God damn it! I knew I should have just clicked OK and proceeded like everybody else in America. God. This is what my father tried to keep me from happening. Ugh.
And joining the man who gave me an idea to sacrifice Brian, Mr. Taser. Taser, welcome back.
What?
I would just like to say that I did no such thing. Not that I have any particular like of Bri, but I just don't want to claim credit for something that I didn't actually do. Because I'm honest like that.
Et tu, Taser? Et tu? You betray me?
It doesn't matter. Thanos is all going to crush our heads next week anyways. But we're not here to talk about Infinity War just yet. That will be our next show, which is hard to believe when you think about it. It's finally here. But in case you're listening, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel-related. And when I mean all things Marvel-related, I mean all things Marvel-related. So let's get into something that's technically old because we kind of overlooked it. But according to certain outlets, CBR, Marvel has plans to reintroduce to the Ultimate Universe. Now, if you remember, in 2015, the Ultimate Universe died along with every other universe. And Doom only saved the chunk of it. And now it seems it's coming back somehow. This is dumb. I don't like, here's the thing. I'm going to walk you down memory road a little bit, right? I'm going to walk you down memory road. The Ultimate Universe, you know, it was one of the first Marvel comics I started reading, like outside of Spider-Man. And it was different, at least at the beginning, because it was taking these iconic characters and basically pressing the fuck you button to most of them. and pushing them in directions that they quote unquote couldn't do in the main story, in the main books. And to certain people, the Ultimate Universe was the cool new thing in the how they used to do, at least in the main books, they were the old ways of doing things. They were old fashioned. Bold storytelling, interesting big ideas, fucking Red Skull's the son of Captain America, that kind of shit.
If I remember correctly, the very first issue of the Ultimates had George W., you know, introducing Captain America, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's a Triskelion.
Yeah, which was, pretty fucking radical.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, you had the Ultimate Fantastic Four, the Ultimate X-Men, the whole mini-universe. You know, I mean, I think in the Ultimate Universe, Wolverine was Cable.
Like a time distorted version or something like that. And Wolverine perved on teenage girls, but it was way more creepy and overt than it was in the fucking 616.
Wait a minute, what was creepy about it? She was legal and she was hot and she wanted it.
Well, there was an issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, I think, where him and Peter Parker body switched and he was perving on MJ the entire time, who was a 14-year-old high school student at
the
time.
And he was the same age, right? So while it wasn't legal,
Taser.
It wasn't,
Taser,
you know, Taser, I'm saying.
Taser.
I'm just, hey, look. What's wrong
letter
with
of the law, touch and ride? Law, my friend. Letter of the law, spirit of the law, okay?
Well, he was in his body, so that means it was not statutory rape?
Oh my god. The point is
the Ultimate Universe was bold in storytelling. Slowly but surely, that sort of shifted, that mentality at least shifted to the main books, whether you like it or not. Mm. To some worse. And then they killed it off. But since then, they've shown instances of the Ultimate Universe coming back. I mean, in Ultimates number 100, the fucking Ultimates are back. Like Captain America, Giant Man, that team is around. They're running around. Evil Reed Richards, who has a code name, and I never remember it. The Maker?
Yeah, that was his villainous, that villain is fucking awesome. The Maker is so fucking twisted.
Evil Richards is great. And there's a couple of things. And apparently they did a Spider-Man 2, which I didn't hear anybody talk about, but apparently there's there's a shot of the entire Ultimates just hanging around, like including Thor, Giant Man, the team back. So I don't see the point at this point because the waters are so diluted they became so diluted between the mainstream Marvel Universe and the Ultimate Universe to the point where let's just get rid of it. You're just going to have two Captain Americas running around and, you know, two whatevers, or you might do something different, but I guess in comics, nothing really dies, even universes. so it's it's weird. I don't want it to come back. I was happy. Okay. I got all those great stories. Some of them not so good. Fuck you, Jeff Loeb. Since you want to talk about the downfall of the Ultimate Universe, that shit started right there, and it didn't recover.
Yeah, Ultimates 3.
Ultimates 3. Anything. Look, Spider-Man, not with side. Miles Morales, not with side. Anything outside of Spider-Man after Ultimates 3 was just... it was garbage. It was all garbage. Human garbage. So, I don't trust Marvel to bring this universe back. My theory is that they're going to use this Ultimate Universe, or whatever it's going to be, to fucking get all the legacy characters and just shove them off over there. And just okay, you people are bitching about, you know, female Thor, Jane Foster, she's dead. But, all the new characters, well, I don't want this character. Where's my Captain America? You know, all that stupid shit. They're going to move them. They're going to move Riri Williams over there. They're going to move Miles Morales over there. They're going to move all these other characters of the Ultimate Universe. And, this is their universe now.
That seems like a bit. I don't know about all that. I mean, if anything, it may be the grounds for retiring the older legacy characters and putting them there. Maybe bring back OG Nick Fury, you know, throw Tony Stark in there after where the fuck he's been.
They're just bringing Tony Stark back. In Iron Man
600.
Yeah, Iron Man 600. Do you not read? Do you not even look at the.
I don't read Iron Man. No, fuck that.
Bitch, I'm talking about the advertisements. Like, they're everywhere.
Well, I haven't read through that book yet. I mean, I have the previews issue, but I don't have it. I haven't read it yet. So
confirm, yes. Brian doesn't look at advertisements when he reads this comic.
Oh, my God.
Brian has standards.
Is that an insult? Or are you telling me I have standards?
He's a Red Sox fan, so he doesn't have that much standards.
All I know is that Joe Kelly throws a standard right hook, okay? Better standard than any other Yankees thing they can throw in Red Sox players.
See, now you went there, you know.
You're goddamn right I went there.
Taser, what do you think about the potential revival of the Ultimate Universe?
It makes me mad that we went through Hickman's Secret Wars and all the bullshit that happened before it, because not for nothing... Everything, I think for maybe about a year and a half, all of the, a lot of the Ultimate stories that were coming up, with the sole exception being, I think, Morales' Spider-Man, everything seemed to be headed towards one massive conflagration. You know, everything seemed to be just kind of discombobulating, fucking
Reed went, I remember, turning to the Maker, all of that shit. Within 3 years, the Ultimate Universe had like three different quote-unquote guys who were going to reboot the entire thing and reshape the universe. I remember Jonathan Hale Fialkov was the one guy who was going to work on like Fantastic Four, and he was going to redo some shit. And then I forget who else. There was at least two other writers that they had pegged as like, you know, in as many years, three in 3 years, I think, where it was like, this is going to set the tone for the Ultimate Universe to come. And it was really off kilter and did not feel genuine or like any heart at all. Like, call it big, stupid, cheesy, whatever. The Ultimates were an achievement, I think, in what the Ultimate Universe was trying to portray, in that, you know, it was a harder edge story than most comic readers were used to at the time. You know, you had Captain America screaming at the A on his head, didn't stand for France, and you had, you know, Tony Stark, who was overtly just swilling booze and, you know, banging supermodels and shit. And, you know, Thor was like just this like weird hippie type dude everyone
he thought was an crazy. He was an activist who punched the shit out of you.
Yeah, seriously, it was different, and it did what it was supposed to do for a while. But then, like you said, Iggy, and I think it was really with the advent of the Marvel Cinematic was where things started to fall off too, when Jeff Loeb got involved, and also when they started changing the 616 to mirror the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which in itself took on a harder edge, I think more akin to the Ultimate Universe, you know, is where things really started to kind of go off the rails, and it wasn't as special anymore. You know, it's not like there weren't stories that could be told, but it wasn't as special as what it used to be. It became basically just another imprint, you know? So for them to bring this back, it really is stupid and pointless, because then why did we read Secret Wars? Why was everything built up in the Ultimate Universe to end only to bring it? Like, yeah, I know nothing really stays dead in comics, but that we're talking about like characters and stuff. You're talking about taking on responsibility for bringing back an entire universe's worth of characters and plot lines that you really didn't have a great handle on near the end, and you're just probably going to let go of in about 5 years or so down the road anyway. So it really doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what are they doing to engineer this return that's going to make everyone sit up and go, wow? Like, is it going to be like the opposite? It's going to be a return to like 60s style storytelling where everyone's G. Willikers and old shucks and, like, you know, it's all like weird? Like, I don't understand what it is exactly that they think they're going to be able to achieve that, you know, they can't do in just the standard stuff. So it's really kind of baffling to me. You know, and I'll keep an eye on it now, because apparently it completely slipped my radar, which as newsboy, I am shamed for it. You know,
you
but
should be.
Yeah. And I am. But it's so stupid to me. And maybe it's the fact that it debuted in fucking Spider-Man 2, which nobody fucking read, because why would you? You know, it was on the downswing of Bendis's career at Marvel, you know, and I think the plot line involved like an evil Miles Morales, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that. Yeah, if I remember correctly, evil Miles Morales jumped to the Ultimate Universe, if I'm not mistaken. But I can't.
And what book was this?
Spider-Man 2. Remember they did the big Spider-Man crossover?
Yeah, the one that did just is still going on now, isn't it?
No, they wrapped it. This was in the last issue, apparently. I was reading the article.
Okay. Well, I know this one was. Peter had found, I think it was the Miles Morales from this universe, because he was like taller and older and whatever, but I don't know how he got his powers. I just know that him and Peter didn't work all that well together, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But I mean, look, getting back to the point, Ultimate Universe had some really great standout stuff. The Ultimate Spider-Man stuff, the early stuff anyway, and most of the stuff through will stand the test of time, I think, as quality storytelling. The first two volumes of Ultimates are great. There is some great stuff in the Ultimate Fantastic Four. That's where Marvel Zombies came from, you know. And there was some decent X-Men stuff, you know, not great, but decent, you know. But to try and go about bringing back this entire universe is just a waste, because why would you do that? You could throw the resources at making the 616 even better and telling those stories there. I don't understand what the move is here. It really kind of baffles me. So, you know, we'll wait and see, I guess. But, I mean, Taser, did you ever, like, were you a fan of the Ultimate Universe back when it first dropped, or was it, like, did it slip your radar completely?
No, it didn't, but I would say I was mostly a fan of the Ultimates. Not so much Spider-Man, not so much the X-Men. The X-Men a little bit, because there were some quirks to how they played things out that was fun, like the whole Colossus meets North Star and North Star flirts with him and he armors up. there was like little things there that was a lot of fun. But I'd say even the Fantastic Four in like little bits and chunks were a lot of fun, but the one series that wasn't really a series that I had a lot of fun with and I'd say I would stand behind was Ultimates, because that first Ultimate, that first trade,
yeah,
that was just, that was awesome fucking reading, man.
Dude,
and, you know,
Mark Miller and Brian Hitch, if I'm
Brian,
not mistaken.
Brian
yeah.
Hitch at his prime. Yeah. Like, this is like peak Brian Hitch.
That's where you just had Captain America jumping out of the freaking C-130 without a chute. Not even using the shield to land, just without a chute. And he survives. That's like, yes! You know, I mean, that was some shit. And the way everything plays out, you know, with he wakes up and, you know, freaking Ant-Man's a fucking racist.
Racist and
made
like,
me feel small, Jan. Yeah. You made me, you know, feel small.
That was six. What it was the Ultimate Universe. It did things differently, and people weren't as nice. You know, it was real, plus a little bit more twistedness, I'd say, because, you know, they tried not to be as clean as the 616, which is fine. You know, it's its own universe, and they're doing things differently, and, you know, all's well and good. But yeah, I mostly enjoyed the Ultimates. I didn't really fall too much into the others until, I want to say, much later when they were doing, I think the X-Men had gotten canceled, and then they were just doing like limited stuff, and the same thing with Fantastic Four, like when they met the zombie Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I have that original run hanging around somewhere in my long boxes. So, I love that fucking run.
I read some of those, but, you know, like I said, I really loved, you know, the Ultimates.
Yeah, when they started when Avengers or Ultimates 3 came out and they presented incest like it was a regular thing, and it's like, no, it's really not a regular thing. Why would you try to normalize what Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are doing? That's creepy. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Jeff Loeb? Yeah, I'm looking at you, Jeff Loeb. Fucking Jeff Loeb. He doesn't better work on TV. He doesn't shield.
They introduced the Black Panther, but it was just fucking Steve Rogers, right?
And they did a whole annual describing basically how they introduced T'Challa, and then they subsequently wrote him out in the same fucking issue as to why he wasn't there. And it's like, what the... Like, seriously? It was the fucking ridiculous thing. In the annual issue, Black Panther was a subject of the Weapon X program. What? Or Weapon Plus, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, yeah. And he had adamantium panther claws that popped out and shit. But the thing is, he was a subject of Nick Fury... And in order to, you know, keep Black Panther on the sidelines or under his thumb, he not only fucked up, he took out Black Panther's ability to speak. So he only used like sign language and shit. And when Steve Rogers found
Cassie.
Steve Rogers found out, he smuggled T'Challa back to Wakanda to let him go home, and he took up Black Panther just to keep Fury happy, and then revealed himself. It was the stupidest fucking bullshit.
That is awful. Wow.
Oh my god.
Good god.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking bad.
Yeah. Now having hear you talking about it makes me want to go read Ultimates.
Yeah, it's an annual issue out there. I forget exactly what volume it's under, but it's an annual issue where it explains the entire thing of how Black Panther came to be and then what happened to him. And it's really quick. It's characters one and done within the issue, so it's like ridiculous.
I still love the second volume of Ultimates 2, you know, where you have the trial of the Incredible...
The
Loki stuff, the Grand Theft America, the trial of the Incredible Hulk. Like, that shit was awesome. The Passion of Thor... Like,
oh my god, seeing him reclaim the thunder and Loki being like, oh no, and Thor's just like, father wants a word, Loki.
No,
and
go
smashes
ahead.
Him.
Two best moments in the entire fucking run, if you ask me, and both of them involved Hawkeye. No, excuse me. One involved Hawkeye and one involved Iron Man. Hawkeye was when he was being held captive and they had his arms and legs, everything was bound, and he had no weapons.
You know what you're talking about?
And he killed the guys with his fucking fingernails.
Used them as projectile weapons.
It is like, no, wait a minute, you gotta shoot him now, shoot him. He's about to touch a he was about to touch a scalpel. He was still mostly chained up, and that guy was scared absolutely fuckless if he touched anything. So of course, you know, Hawkeye killed everybody. And the other was when Natasha finally tried to betray Stark. And Stark.
Oh
was
yeah,
like,
they made her the villain and shit.
Yeah, yeah, and you know he kind of you know flipped the script on over going, you know, I actually control all of those nanites that are flowing through your system. I go, who did you think you were dealing with? But she had also just put a bullet in Jarvis's head, like, oh shit, they killed Jarvis.
Damn.
So, oh yeah, one is still my favorite, but two had some truly truly awesome moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still a fan of a lot of the X-Men stuff. Again, to me, everything up until Ultimatum, like even Ultimatum is okay. It's all right. But anything after Ultimatum or definitely after Ultimate Series is just like, except for some of the Spider-Man stuff, is just shit. It just didn't connect. But let's go on. I think that was a nice. I kind of wanted it to turn into a trip down memory road for Ultimates, and I think it turned out pretty well. Now I'm gonna go reread Ultimates volumes 1 and 2 because they're fucking awesome. If you haven't read them, go read them. They're awesome. They're amazing. They're great stories.
They are pure just comic book goodness. Like yeah. I use the term they're cinematic comic books in the same way that Mark Miller does his work. It sets up like an action movie or a superhero movie in your head. It's really good stuff.
So. Right. Yeah. You know, if you want to know why. You know, people revere Brian Hitch to this day. It's because of this. I mean, he did Authority before this. But I think to me, and I've read Authority, I think this is to me, it's like where he's like, oh, okay, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but... like the level of detail, how epic every shot looks. A lot of the credit goes to Brian Hitch.
Yeah, what he had to work with here was he made the most of it, to say the least.
Yeah. He drew the entire series. Granted, the entire series is like 24 issues, but fucking great.
Yeah.
And then also remember that the Red Skull is the son of Captain America. Who
that was a pretty good fucking one. Yeah. That the later stuff, that and especially the Ghost Rider Punisher stuff was pretty entertaining, if nothing else. Yeah.
There was some dumb shit in there, but let's go ahead and move on to some other things. Fuck Cloak and Dagger. Scarlet Witch. apparently Elizabeth Olsen, the star of the Scarlet Witch, wants her own solo movie. And she wants it to be in the vein of House of M, which I don't know how you would do that without, you know, the X-Men, unless like the House of S, because like, you know, it'd be the House of Division and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, I don't really know how you would go about doing that unless you waited for the deal to go through with Fox.
Yeah, because House of M works is because it puts Magneto, it puts mutants on top. Like, that's what makes House of M interesting. I mean, then and also you have the betrayal factor, the fact that Pietro pushed her to create this reality and in further breaking her. To me, if they would do House of M or any kind of adaptation of it, they would have to push Wanda, and because they haven't really done that, right? Like, I mean, they tease a little bit with Age of Ultron where Quicksilver dies, and then of course, like, they could have pushed it more with the fact that she was being persecuted by Vision in Civil and like everybody else in Civil War, like just slowly mentally breaking down. But they have, like, she's kind of just the same happy-go-lucky teenager. So, if anything, I would want the film to deal with like her mental issues, because like sadly that's what the Scarlet Witch is primarily known for. She goes fucking crazy, and because she's ridiculously powerful, shit goes bad really really fast. Like in an ideal world where Thanos isn't the ultimate bad, like, you know, say in a couple years from now, like, because they're all pretty much gonna with the exception of Iron Man and Cap, both of them are gonna survive Infinity War, like, you know, have fucking do Avengers Disassembled. And to have be the movie centered around that, like have her first movie be that shit or something. I don't know, but I would love it because I love Scarlet Witch. She's one of my favorite characters. I would rather see a Netflix series with her because I think it suits her. Because while Scarlet Witch is cool, like her own solo stuff isn't exactly lending to big epic feels. Like it
she doesn't have an extensive catalog of stuff to draw upon like other characters do.
Yeah, I mean, unless you wanted to do a Vision and Scarlet Witch movie, which could be interesting. That could be like a dark romance story. Mm. You know,
it's a bad romance.
Yeah, but I would want to see it, but I don't think House of M is the right way to go. Taser, how do you feel?
I think I might have actually we're talking about the Scarlet Witch thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I posted this on Facebook. As a matter of fact, Brian and I, you know, had commented on it, and it was more or less like it would have been interesting if the Marvel the Marvel Cinematic Universe was as whole as the comic universe, then you could actually do that. But here it's like you would seriously have to manufacture something for her to, you know, go the whole no more mutants or whatever, and then do that, and then basically play It's a Wonderful Life. You know, that's just...
Well, No More Mutants was the fallout from House of M. It wasn't the inciting incident.
But
you
you honestly think they would end that movie with no more heroes? You know, at some
point... No more Avengers? Reset the clock and...
Exactly.
You know.
So, again, it would be like... in the comics, there was a lasting effect. They're not going to do that for the movie. I mean, come on.
I mean, I think there's more potential there than you're giving it credit for just with what you have already. But that could just... I mean, look, I know... If you want to do House of M, there's really only one way to do House of M. I'm not going to sit here and argue that. That's not till battle, I'm not going to win.
Even that aside, working with what she could work with in the MCU, I don't see it working to that extent given what she has to work with. And even then, I don't see it having like the lasting effect that it did for the Marvel Universe, for the comic universe, you know? I just don't, you know, and that was an interesting dynamic to have happen for the comic universe. For the movies, they'd have to invent somebody to have them get knocked down and then depowered, because you don't have a whole lot of heroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they could, you know, sacrifice like that. You know, imagine them doing that to T'Challa. As popular as he's become, you know, recently, not going to happen. Black people would rise up and start screaming Wakanda and storm the buildings and everything.
I'm not even saying it's got to be like that, you know, deletes all the heroes. But what if, you know, in the lead up to, say, let's call it a soft reboot of the MCU where you recast people and recast storylines and shit like that, you have that big event where you do no more Avengers, and that just erases the Avengers from Marvel Cinematic, and that can give rise to new heroes coming out of the fold. You know, doesn't specifically have to start off, you know, that way.
But
I'm not saying it's a good idea, but
that,
you know,
would also remove, you know, the most of the people that are going to get removed are characters that people currently like, you know. And I mean, do we even have 20 heroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I would say we have at least that. Yeah.
Given the sidekicks, probably, yeah.
I mean, are we counting MCU Netflix and shit like that, or
no? Netflix doesn't count.
Doesn't count. So I don't think we have 20 heroes.
I think we do.
In the Marvel, okay, Black Panther.
I'll jump a list while you guys are doing that.
I'm just saying. Okay, let's go. Core Avengers. You got Iron Man, Cap, Thor, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Black Panther, Spider-Man, all four, five members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, Hulk. I'm just saying.
Right. No, it's
Strange,
fair.
Ant-Man, Wasp, Winter Soldier.
At the end of Avengers, there's going to be quite a few heroes hanging around. Like, not going to say they're all going to live, but...
Rescue, potentially? I don't fucking know. That's amazing.
how many is that? Because actually, I lost count after five because that wasn't...
I'll do a list. Are we counting?
There's a lot of heroes.
There isn't a lot of heroes.
Wong? Just...
You're scratching Wong, now. You're really reaching.
Hey, Wong's a hero in his own right, okay?
Hey, we never saw Lady Sif die in Asgard, so she could still be floating around out there too, you know?
Yeah, she's floating, literally, because Asgard is gone. Oh. And you can't count us because we're dead.
What if she was on like Alfheim or something and she just looks up in the sky and watches Asgard explode and is like, oh shit.
Well, she's still stuck there then because the Rainbow Bridge is gone.
But she's still on Asgard or the Realm Eternal,
okay,
whatever you want to
so
fucking call it.
She's still alive, so all right, you know, then if you want to count
that. I just really want to see
Howard
Jamie
the Duck.
Alexander
you can,
still
we can
on
count
screen,
him
okay?
Too.
Is it that much for me to want Jamie Alexander on screen? I don't think so.
I'd rather have Jamie Kennedy.
You got a lot of Marvel heroes.
No, the point is we don't. And we don't have enough that I think sacrificing any of them.
Look, I think it's a move.
Look, you could kill off War Machine and nobody would be mad.
Hey!
They basically almost did in fucking Civil War and nobody gave a shit.
And
so,
they
yeah.
killed them off in the freaking comic and I actually cared because I like War Machine.
So, no, you just wanted to see him and Carol Danvers get down and dirty. Don't lie to us,
that's,
you dirty
despite
man.
The fact that I wanted to see her have sex with a guy in a robot
you know, here's
suit.
Here's
okay?
how I'm, War Machine's kind of forgettable, and that sucks. Like, I forgot he got punched to death by Thanos. I forgot about that.
That's
what if
because,
they
that's because
what
you're
if they recreate
person.
That moment in the fucking movie?
Wouldn't
fucking
that suck?
Don Cheadle gets punched to death by Thanos.
Dude, that would suck for Don Cheadle. First he gets crippled, and then he gets murdered in the next Avengers movie. Oh, he's got to be a black man, huh? He's got to be a black man who's going to get crippled and murdered.
The second Black Panther showed up, that's the second War Machine to realize, well, my time is up soon.
Well, shit. If it makes you feel any better, I'll be going with you. Yeah, thanks, Vision. It doesn't make me feel any better. Well, but I think there is more potential there. I mean, not necessarily for the House of M storyline, but I chalk that up to Elizabeth Olsen being a novice, you know, comic book fan at best. She doesn't strike me as the type to hit up the LCS every Wednesday. So, you know, that having been said, I think ultimately what it comes down to is, you know, what she is willing to, you know, how far she's willing to take the character. Because, like you said, they've teased it before. Like, for example, remember the big Stinger teaser at the end with the Age of the Miracles and you see Baron Strucker right. for the first time and the twins and she's in like a borderline straitjacket and like in a trance and shit. Well, and then the same thing happens where, you know, she's psyched out about her own powers in Civil War and at the end of that she's like in a straitjacket in the raft. So they've definitely played with and shown the concept of, you know, she can lose control of herself if not necessarily in a homicidal way, then at the very least in a way that makes her doubt herself and her powers kind of spin out a little bit. So that's definitely can be in the cards. But again, ultimately what it comes down to is what story you want to do, because Scarlet Witch is really only known for one major story and it's the House of M, and you can't do that properly until you get the X-Men, I think, established in the Marvel Cinematic.
Yeah,
so,
but you don't have to do House of M to do a decent Scarlet Witch, you know, story.
I mean, I suppose you could have her. You could even have her do a team up movie with Doctor Strange, and have you know that be a thing. That would be interesting to see.
That,
I'd watch
that.
The shit
that would be, you know. But
no, I mean Baron, that's what Doctor Strange 2 is going to be because it's no more magicians or whatever, no more sorcerers.
Oh, yeah, Baron Mordo stepping up, huh?
Actually, having Baron Mordo go after her to you know like eliminate mage users. That would be an interesting
But she doesn't
story.
Use magic, though. Like, she's not a magic user.
We don't know what the fuck
her
she does.
Her power comes from the soul, from the mind.
Her
stone.
Power is quote-unquote weird, says Maria Hill, and that's all we need to know.
Her power is undefined. We have no idea.
It comes from the mind stone, though. We know where it comes from.
But we don't know exactly what you would call it aside from, I mean, is it just telekinesis or is she telepathic? Does that make her Jean Grey, for God's sake? Okay.
I mean, she's a redhead, so.
Yeah, well, yeah. But she's done things that aren't telepathy or telekinesis. The thing that she did to Vision in Civil War, that wasn't even telekinesis. That was gravity. That was just straight up gravity.
Well, her true power is that she can manipulate probability or reality
right.
or substitution.
So, again, you know. Her powers, as we've seen them, are undefined, and I think they need to be that way because trying to put a label on it is, you know, is a fool's game, all right? And I'm fine with that. All I'm saying is we don't need to have House of M. Not that I wouldn't want it. I just think that the way the cinematic universe is now, it would suck. But you can do a decent Scarlet Witch story without having to fall back to some great big plot line that doesn't exist because, yeah, she's only had the one. But, I mean, so fucking what? We're talking a fictional character here. Do something. You know, write a good story. It's just not one that you can actually pull from the books. Hey, I mean, isn't that what imagination's all about?
Right, but that's too hard. Anyways, they're going to build it to fucking the Beyonder after Infinity War, so it doesn't matter.
You know what? Actually, you know what they would. You know what they should do, and I'm not sure they have the balls to do it. But once the deal goes through, they should definitely have fucking Scarlet Witch and Legion trip through fucking someone's psyche, just doing all kinds of wacky psychic magic bullshit.
That's gonna
like
be
some
painful.
Sort of weird abstract David Fincher movie or something like that. You know?
Yeah, a Blue Velvet or some shit.
Yeah, like a '50s like all '60s right. housewife era or something like that. You know?
Let's go ahead and close it on one last thing. And that is, while we don't have any news of the Fantastic Four during the MCU anytime, there's certainly a lot of speculation running around of who should play the Fantastic Four. Because at this point, after the disaster that was Fantastic,
yeah.
So we're gonna get the Fantastic Four at some point. There have been fans, at least on Twitter, and even this actor himself, John Krasinski, formerly of Jim of The Office, and his wife Emily Blunt. Not Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt. Okay. I keep thinking of Emily Rossum, and I think I'm confusing them all the time.
Oh, Emily Rossum from Shameless?
Yeah, they for some reason I get them confused all the time. Anyways, John Krasinski has put his name out there that he would like to play Mr. Fantastic. He's currently has this is on a promotional tour for the new movie In a Quiet Place, which is apparently pretty good, according
it
to
it is. I enjoyed the movie. There was one part I didn't like, but the whole movie, other than that, it really was a well done movie. I've seen it twice, so that tells you.
Yeah, something. So it basically be that both him and John and Emily Blunt will both play. I can see him playing Mr. Fantastic. He definitely doesn't have that foppishness that Eoin Griffith, the guy who played Fantastic Four, who played Mr.
Fantastic. Oh yeah, Eoin Griffith or whatever the fuck his
name.
The British guy.
So, yeah, Lancelot.
The British guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he was actually decent for what he had to work with. I mean, he wasn't the best, but...
And then he had Jessica Alba to work with.
God, let's not talk about that. I prefer to focus on Michael Chiklis being a fucking balls-out awesome Ben Grimm, so...
You can focus on John, on Captain Johnny, all right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind focusing on, you know, Jessica Alba because she was naked in it.
Not that you could see, I mean...
But still, she was fake naked. Anyway, I think John Krasinski, I think he could actually do it. I don't see Reed when I look at him. I don't. But I think he could pull it off like Chris Evans pulls off Captain America, who when I look at him, I still don't see Cap. But he pulls it off, you know, and I don't have a problem there. You know, as long as you can pull it off, you know, I'm good to go. But I could definitely see Emily Blunt playing Sue because she's got the... That I don't want to say stature, but I'm not exactly sure what the word is. Sue has a presence, you know, in the comics and within that, you know, that four person dynamic that I think Emily Blunt could definitely, you know, bring to life on screen. And that's really it, if you ask me. That you know, that's it more so than anything else, regardless of what color her hair is. You know, Emily Blunt could nail Sue Storm, in my opinion.
I would like to see that.
I actually just pictured something sexual, so I couldn't help that.
Brian, what do you think about like, it's not official, but would you like to see John Krasinski?
And I shared this on the Twitter page, and that in itself I put up because the headline is, John Krasinski and Emily Blunt are Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm. And I said they're hypothetical candidates in our retweet because that's clickbaity bullshit. But as far as potential candidates go, I mean, they're both A-list actors. Emily Blunt was a fucking amazing in Live, Die, Repeat or whatever the fuck they decided to call
Edge
that.
Edge of Tomorrow,
whatever. They couldn't decide what to call it. And John Krasinski, I mean... I'd be willing to see what he could do with it. Because here's the thing. Jim from The Office, which is, you know, primarily what I know him from, obviously. I've seen him in a couple other things.
Know him from that.
He was in that Benghazi movie that I saw that it was all right. You know, my dad wanted to see that. And he's in this. And, you know, it's not necessarily a direct translation of Mr. Fantastic unless you're trying to drastically redo Mr. Fantastic. But, I mean, I would be willing to see what he could do with it. He's a talented enough actor. He can be funny when he needs to be. He can be sweet. He can be, you know, tough. If you almost wanted to reimagine Mr. Fantastic as like a classic, like, scientific adventurer, almost in the vein of, like, Doc Savage or something like that, I'd be interested to see him try to pull that off. That'd be something cool to see. You know, Mr. Fantastic you don't see every day, but that's kind of away from the heart of who he is. You know, he's an academic at heart, I think. So I'd be interested to see how that would work. You know, I'd be willing to give him a shot just as much as anybody else, because Mr. Fantastic and I think the Fantastic Four are characters that nobody really has a pick off the top of their head for, at least not for Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm. They're difficult characters, I think, to wrap your head around, because they're not your typical superheroes. You know, like, you could point to any big guy in Hollywood and say he'd be a good Ben Grimm if he was a tough guy. Or you could point at any, you know, smarmy asshole and be like, oh, he'd be a decent Johnny Storm or whatever. But Reed and Sue are different characters because they're essentially parents to an entire superhero team, you know. And would I be willing to see what they could do with it? Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I would be willing to sit down and watch a movie with those two as Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman. But, you know, as far as like when we'll see that, like you said, they're hypothetical candidates, nothing really in the making as of yet. But honestly, I can think of worse. I can absolutely think of worse picks. You know, like Jessica Alba, for example, would be a worse pick, I think. but yeah, I mean, I honestly couldn't think of anybody better off the top of my head. And so, yeah, why not give them a shot? Because not only would they be, you know, I think they could do the role correctly, but they're also real life husband and wife. So they have that authenticity about them. And I think that could go a long way towards selling a story, you know, because you want to have that vibe of family. You know, the best Fantastic Four movie in the last 18 years has been The Incredibles. And that is something to me that is fucking astounding, wow. You know? So if you want to have that authentic family feeling, why not go for a husband and wife pair who are obviously okay working together, as evidenced by, you know, A Quiet Place. So, yeah, why not give them a fucking shot? I'd be down for that. Hell yeah.
Okay, right, then hold on. Who would you get to play Ben and Johnny?
CGI monsters. There you go.
Actually, you know who I wouldn't mind seeing as fucking Ben? I heard this casting the other day. I thought it was pretty decent. And I'm not sure if you guys will know him or by name directly, but Dominic Purcell. He plays Heatwave in the DC TV universe or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, McRory. I could be down for him to play some Ben Grimm. He's great. I mean, obviously, my mind goes to Michael Chiklis, but Michael Chiklis is a little bit older than John Krasinski or Sue Storm or Emily Blunt, rather. I don't know if he still has it in him to play the character. I would give him a shot any day of the week, though, but that's just me. But someone actually also made a brilliant casting observation for Johnny Storm. They said Taron Egerton, the guy who played the younger kid in Kingsman, the Eggsy, I think it is. I could hang with that. You know, it's not a terrible pick.
No, I could definitely see that. Saying that he, you know, scrubs the whole British accent thing. If he plays Eggsy,
well, Emily Blunt is British.
Right, exactly. So saying, you know, he scrubs the accent off. If he plays Eggsy. Basically, you know, if he plays Johnny as Eggsy, just without, you know, the references, yeah, he could do that. Yeah, definitely.
He absolutely could, you know. Little brother, you know, running around, causing all kinds of mayhem. Why the fuck not? And, you know, you could throw any – I really hate it because I love Michael Chiklis as Ben Grimm, but I almost hate to say it. You could throw any big guy actor in there, really, and I think he'd fill the role just fine. I mean, you could make that guy the black actor, the, you know, Spanish actor, whatever demographic you want to cover, really.
I think you could do that, but – speaking honestly, do you think Batista could play Ben Grimm?
Batista's Drax the Destroyer.
No. Saying he wasn't. So do you think Batista could play Ben Grimm / Thing? I don't.
Yes.
I really don't.
I honestly don't know. I don't think so. I don't think.
The reason why he works for Drax is because Drax doesn't talk a lot. And what he does say, and they wrote it that way, is everything is just off. You know, you just can't help but kind of like look at him and cock your head a little bit. That works for Batista because Batista, I've seen a little bit of his acting, like when he's not wearing face paint. And yeah, he's not. And I don't normally pay attention to acting. His acting is not all that great.
Well, I did say almost any.
Fair enough.
Big guy actor. There are exceptions, obviously, but, you know, by and large.
Who could play him? John Cena. Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, I would love it to see the thing.
I would actually imagine that.
Hold on. final part of the first movie, big battle in New York City. Thing faces up, squares up with Dr. Doom. He does the shoulder tackle and he does the five triple. And put the Thing in jorts. Give the Thing jorts.
Jorts. Oh my gosh.
We just make the best Fantastic Four movie ever.
Yes. Spider Lantern. I want to see the Thing doing the five knuckle shuffle while wearing shorts. I need this to happen, man. Oh my god, somebody create that in WWE 2K, whatever it is right now.
Oh my god.
Oh gosh. That's
okay. Funny. Let John Cena be the Thing. He could do it.
Hell yeah, let him be the Thing.
And he could also do a beer enema.
Exactly. All right, but that's enough for the news. Let's close the show because I think we're running a little longer than I expected. But fuck it.
Tazy,
you're going up first. Thanos, Infinite Siblings, suck its dick.
No, I'm doing Betty and Veronica. You know, Lesbos Forever, Volume Number 3.
That was out this week?
Yes.
Shit, I missed it.
You know, and it's the one with the special with Cheryl Blossom, so they made it the threesome. But anyway.
Okay. Neapolitan, vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're just cool here at the Mighty Warriors Theme Warp Podcast.
Yeah, I'd bang Cheryl Blossom. Anyway, Thanos, the Infinity Siblings. Graphic novel done by Alan Davis and the man Jim Starling is a not confusing. It's a confusing but delightful and satisfying piece of work once you've reread it like maybe two or three times. rather than go through the whole story, which really would suck to try to do orally, and I realize how that sounded, and I didn't mean it that way. suffice to say that this whole story involves Thanos and his brother Star Fox manipulating.
That guy's a thing.
Oh yeah, they're related, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, manipulating events to try to prevent certain things in the future from happening and repositioning themselves. Starlin has kind of, I don't know how to say this nicely. He's reinvented Star Fox instead of the fun-loving, happy-go-lucky adventurer.
Borderline statutory rapist?
No. Sociopath.
Okay, then. Moving right along.
Yeah. He engineers it so that he's tossed into the distant past, and he's left in some place without any technology. You know, Star Fox, yeah, he comes from an advanced civilization, but that doesn't mean that he himself is a genius, you know? Yes and no, but also he's in a place where there isn't a whole lot of stuff for him to work with. So kind of like when Reed got tossed into the past in, what was it, like the 1860s, and he, you know, it took him like, 15 years to figure out how to make, you know, a certain piece of technological device in a cave. But regardless, we're looking here at Thanos and his brother manipulating events to stop this, I'd say, pan-universal entity called the Hunger from eating everything in this universe, and also from co-opting Thanos himself, because Thanos he meets Kang in this, who had also hooked up with a future version of Star Fox to, again, further manipulate events, and Kang had come across this Hunger who literally eats the universe. I mean, you know, whole systems and, you know, sections of the universe are just nebulous, just like nothing there, kind of like Crisis. And at one point in one future version of Thanos, he ends up turning Thanos into death. So there is a whole lot of time jumping forward and backward, manipulating people and events, trying to get this one correct path to get the result that you want. And at the end of everything, you know, Star Fox himself goes from the time period that we know to a future version where he's got like the white, you know, side, you know, like sideburns, kind of like the whole Reed thing. And it's mostly that version of Star Fox who's now like something like what, maybe 3,000, 4,000 years old, that we see bouncing around, and he hooks up with Pip the Troll. And it's a huge chessboard of manipulation and time jumps. And it ends with Thanos basically manipulating himself, because the version of Thanos that becomes the new avatar of death, you know, ends up coming across current Thanos at a later point, and then telling him that he needs to do this and he needs to do that and needs to do whatever. And once all of this stuff is done, they end up going back to, because like Thanos was originally hanging out in Death's palace because Death loves him now, which I think comes from the currently running comic.
Sure, why not? Let's just leave it at that.
Well, I mean, you know, there's something like that going on there. But either way, I'm not going to argue it. But suffice to say that when Thanos go back to wherever the hell Death is, Death recognizes him, Death Thanos, we'll call him, as Death, which she does not like. And she realizes that, well, at some point, you know, he functionally becomes her. She becomes, you know, upset by it. Therefore, current Thanos loses favor. And, you know, current Thanos is like, huh, what, who, what, where, when, why? And Thanos now realizes that Death Thanos has now manipulated him. And he can't break from the chain because he doesn't know everything that happens to get to that point. He's seen some of it, but he hasn't seen all of it. And mm-hmm. Death Thanos now decides that, you know, well, not decided, but he tells him that now you're where I'm at. Or you're on the road where to get to where I'm at, and now I have to guide you, and you may not like it. And current Thanos is all like, well, no, I do not like this. No. And he's like, yeah, that's okay. It's all right. You'll come to accept it. And he leaves. And current Thanos is like, well, fuck me. I've manipulated myself. And if you understand Thanos, you realize how horrible that is, because in his own words, he's now removed from himself free will. And if anything, Thanos was all about making his own choices without any interference or whatever the fuck. And now he really can't see himself doing that because he doesn't know what's going to happen, but he knows that this is most likely where he'll end up. And when you stop and realize that, it's like it's one humongous manipulation of Thanos. This makes it like such a wow, holy gee fuck book, you know? But to be fair, like I said originally and in the beginning, you might need to reread this because there's a lot of bouncing around done, you know, in different times. And wait a minute. So this Thanos here, he went over here, and then we leap forward to 100 years, and then he went back and did this, but this didn't happen, but they made it seem like that. I'm serious. You really do that. And I kind of got lost. I finished the book, and I went, hold up, what? And I needed to reread this. It is a very, very satisfying cosmic read. It is a well-done story, again, but this is, you know, from, you know, the master himself, Starlin, but it can be confusing, you know, satisfying, but confusing. If I had to, I would say it's worth at least a four, you know, four warriors out of five, but I can't give it any higher because I almost got a headache, you know, the first time I read this, because while I'm generally fine with, you know, time jumps, the sheer amount of them and trying to keep track which Thanos was which. Because even though, you know, Star Fox himself jumps around, Thanos himself is, wait, which one is he again? And that was something. So, yeah, this is at least a 4 out of 5, you know.
All right. Thank you. Thanos, right. Everybody. Thanos, everybody. He's going to kill us all.
Hey, play him off, Sam. Or...
He's going to kill everybody. All right. Great to have you, Thanos. All right, baby. Well, I'm up next with X-Men Grand Design numbers 1 and 2. This was originally released in two individual oversized treasury editions in December and February. But I had listened to an interview prior to the first one even coming out saying that, well, it's going to get also a collection, so it's going to be six oversized issues, treasury size issues, but then three collections. I said, figure, fuck it, I'll just wait for the collections. And I'm glad I waited, because we often use the term love letter for, you know, a lot of things. It's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, but this book is a love letter to the X-Men. So what X-Men Grand Design is, it's done by Ed Piskor, who did a little series called Hip Hop Family Tree. You may have heard of it. God, I sound like a fucking hipster right there. Jesus. Go check it out if you haven't, especially if you love hip hop. But it's basically telling the story of the X-Men within 40 pages per chapter. So you basically get the Stan and Jack years and a little bit of the Neil Adams stuff in 80 pages. And it's all drawn to look like the 60s. Here's the crazy thing about this book. When I opened it up from my package, it had a fucking smell. You know that old paper smell that it's hard. It can't describe it, but you know what it is. That smell of old paper that's not rotted.
It was newsprint.
Newsprint paper. Thank you. Yeah, that's what it was. And it, like, there's dot pitch on the fucking pages. That there was so much. This is an art book. Like, as much as this is a comic book, this is a fucking art book. Like, it talks about, like, Xavier's, you know, his origins along with Juggernaut, introduces, you know, the idea how Juggernaut would get his powers, introduces some future villains that come down later. You know, it tells all these stories, effortlessly, and it looks so good. Like, it's clearly trying to ape the sick, like, he's not trying to do Kirby, but he's definitely trying to emulate that style of the 1960s. And it just looks beautiful. One of the cooler things about it is that it comes with a reprint of X-Men number 1 from 63, and it's recolored by Ed Piskor, and it looks beautiful. Especially if you've seen, like, a lot of, it looks like it belongs in that time period. Because a lot of reprints, it's very flat, it doesn't really look like it belongs. Like, it's just like, okay, it's a reap. It uses digital coloring. This doesn't look like it does. It's so beautiful to look at. And it's amazing because, like, I'm not too familiar with this history of the X-Men that much. My X-Men started, you know, in the 70s with, you know, the all new, all different team, the Uncanny team. So it was interesting to see this go, to see them go back in their classic uniforms. And, you know, there's like these very big, great superhero moments of like Cyclops, and, you know, you can see and he's stuff that wasn't introduced maybe in the back then, but because we know about history, they were introduced. So you see Cyclops and Havoc, you know, they get thrown off their plane with their kids. Then you see, you know, their dad, of course, who would eventually become Corsair, get rescued by one of the Shi'ar in one of the pages. And then, of course, like, because they're hunting for the Phoenix, even though at this point in time and at that time period, we wouldn't know what the Phoenix is. So it's like taking everything and act like just this big retrospective. If you're a fan of the X-Men, go buy this. Just do it. Don't buy it digitally. Buy this physically, because it's something that you want to put on your shelf and you want to show people this. Like, it's a true love letter. 5 out of 5. Like, I can't really say much. You need to buy it. Now, Brian, you got exactly 30 seconds to review Jessica Jones.
Why do I get the time limit imposed on me?
Because I don't like Jessica Jones.
Well, to be fair, I wasn't a big fan of this season either. So I'll just go over some of the finer points. So this season was – I'm going to just get right to it. Spoiler alert, by the way, for anybody out there who wants to watch Jessica Jones season 2 and hasn't done so yet. Jessica Jones season 2 is not as good as season 1, though I probably could have not said anything and you could probably know that. Season largely revolves around the investigation into what gave Jessica her powers and how that affected her. And it involves the revelation that her mother is still alive and also with powers, except she also has an extremely... she has a bad temperament, and, you know, she's basically removed herself from society because she can't function around normal people. So she finds herself at the side constantly of Dr. Carl Mollis, who is a Marvel character transplant. He's the guy responsible for giving Jessica and her mother, Elisa, their powers. You know, Jessica, the season ends with Jessica in a very good place. She actually, despite having to cut some people from her life, which I will get to in a minute, she ends up in a stable relationship with a guy who is not at all superpowered. He has a child from a past relationship, and he's just a decent guy, and they settle into a relationship together, and she's okay with his kid, and it actually ends in kind of a strange place, because it feels like, you know, she's happy for a change, which is good for her, but the season lacked the emotional punch, I think, of season 1, because, you know, it's not really dealing with the Kilgrave of it all anymore. He actually does appear in one episode for an extended period of time. He basically is a recurring hallucination, but by and large, David Tennant is removed from the series. They don't really mention much of Kilgrave. A lot of it is based around the here and now. It's more focused on what now, whereas last season was all about looking back at what trauma shaped Jessica Jones into who she is. And this is more her adapting to what she's going to be, I think. And I think that's a good way to summarize, because season 1's looking back, season 2 is looking forward. It's very much that sort of tone. I think it's Janet McTeer, plays Jessica's mother, Elisa. I'm going to confirm that in just a second, but she was actually very good. Despite the fact I wasn't crazy about the storyline itself, she did an amazing job portraying the character. It is Janet McTeer. She gets reintroduced to Jessica's life, and then from the jump, she starts tearing down Jessica's illusions of what their life was. Jessica's mother reveals she resented her father, and they were planning to get divorced, and that, you know, Jessica romanticizes what the past was, you know, before the powers or her family's death or anything bad happened, but it wasn't all, you know, sunshine and roses. And that's her kind of coming to peace with it over the course of the season, where her mother increasingly goes off the rails. She's with the guy who invented these superpowers and who was behind, IGH, the company that gave not only Jessica and Elisa their powers, but also Power Nuke from last season. He shows up really quickly, only to be killed off again. But essentially, she is doing the bidding of this guy. Hey, let me go. God damn it. She's doing the bidding of Dr. Carl Mollis, and it gets out of hand, and people die. Police officers and whatnot. And ultimately, it ends with Trish actually killing Jessica's mother, which is something you don't really see coming. Although you really should, because as I mentioned to these guys before the show started, Trish takes the cake for being the worst fucking person this season. You know, she increasingly becomes dependent on Simpsons/Nukes enhancement thing to just sort of get her kicking ass and being a hero, so to speak. And she goes back to that addict lifestyle she led as like a teenage pop star or whatever. And ultimately gets to the point where she's so strung out and so self-absorbed, she actually kidnaps the guy, Dr. Carl Mollis, and forces him to give her powers. And in the process of doing so, she has sex with Malcolm, who is also here, and he's a very decently fleshed out character this season. She has sex with him, manipulates him, hits him over the head, and locks him in the trunk of a car. And she goes through this procedure and almost doesn't survive. And again, at the end of the season, she kills Jessica's mother, and Jessica is at the point where she cuts Trish out of her life, saying, I can't forgive you for this. And yet at the end of it all, it's hinted at that she basically does get superpowers at the end of everything. She basically got something out of the deal after being arguably the worst fucking person, and it makes me so fucking irate. Because
question, if I might yes. ask this yes. one question, did she have to kill her?
Yes and no. I mean, it's because there's a big talk between Jess and Trish after the procedure where Trish is like, you know, your mother is superpowered and real other people who don't have the abilities you do can get hurt. And you're risking other people by putting that by, you know, letting her be out there in the world when she is very clearly not equipped to handle the world anymore. Not like she was. And yet she's threatening people. She's already killed people, and you're endangering more people by, you know, letting her live. And granted, it gets to a place where, you know, Alisa is waiting for the police to come and arrest her, you know. And yeah, I mean, Trish shows up and she kills her just outright. She doesn't really There isn't really any cause for it. She just does it. And it's like I said, there really is no provocation for it, except for that hypothetical, well, she's going to do it again because she's not stable, even though it's clearly been shown over the course of the season that Jessica is that stabilizing element for her mother, not necessarily in a healthy way, but in a way where, you know, her daughter can calm her down and get her back to a place where she sees clarity, whereas normally she'd only see racially Hulk rage, basically, you know. So yeah, it's. I don't blame Jessica one bit for cutting Trish out of her life, but, you know, it just pisses me off that Trish did everything wrong and still got superpowers at the end of it all. And at the expense of poor Jessica and Malcolm, who are both just trying to do right, and yet they end up at odds as well. Malcolm actually ends up going to become an investigator for a rival investigation group. And yeah, it really, despite the fact that Jessica alienates most of the people in her life at the end of the season, you know, whereas last season everybody came together, this season they're all kind of going their own separate way, it ends with Jessica in a much better place, almost to the point where I question what they're going to do for season 3, because the place she's in now is pretty much kind of where she was when she first shacked up with Luke Cage and had Danny. So that's kind of a question mark to be had, especially where if you're going to try and reconnect Jessica Jones and Trish, you know, with Trish eventually becoming Hellcat, which is pretty much a lock for season 3, I would think, given the fact that her powers, you know, she's shown to have enhanced reflexes and, you know, reaction time. So she'll probably end up becoming Hellcat next season. But the question of how you bridge that gap from you killed my mother outright to let's be friends again is a big gap that I don't know that they have. They're going to try, but I don't think they have the storyline to fill it. Mm-hmm. So it's a big question mark hanging over the series as to what next season will be. We're definitely going to see Hellcat, I would reckon. We'll see probably a more well-adjusted Jessica Jones. Whether or not they decide to break that and drag her back down to where she was, say, at the beginning of season 1, or if they decide to keep her there at that level medium, you know, and just sort of transfer that Luke Cage storyline where she had got, you know, she had a child and she's happier, whether or not they transfer that over to the guy she's with now, Oscar Ochoa, who is her superintendent, that remains to be seen. But suffice to say, this season was not the best, I don't think. I'm sorry, do you have something, Taser?
No, go ahead.
Right. Well, like I said, suffice to say, the season was not as good as season one. It lacked the emotional punch and depth. It meandered in places. It felt like a more bloated show than it was last season. It had some decent points, like the acting is still great. Kristen Ritter still knocks out the park as Jessica Jones, and Janet McTeer is awesome as her mother, Elisa, and they have great chemistry together. And despite the fact that I fucking hate her, Rachel Taylor as Trish is pretty spot on great. Like
the
Like she's pretty fucking rad. Like she's a great actress, no lie. But their storyline just pissed me off. And obviously, you know, Malcolm Dukas, who is the you know, the former heroin addict turned PI, he's a great character too, and he gets shit on so much, and it's not fair, you know, to him. I don't think he gets
you know
taken
why that
advantage
happens because you know he was RPM Red Ranger, so I mean that kind of automatically
I was gonna say it's because the show is sexist because you know
he's
both
man.
Of the. Yeah. Basically, I mean, this dude
and
got fucked over
man.
By. I mean, first of all, he banged out Trish more than a couple times.
Who?
Yeah. Who? Yeah. And she, all she did
go,
was
go Power Ranger.
Yeah, RPM.
Oh my god. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was a weaker season. But I mean, if you're a fan of the character work, at least it's really good stuff. And shout out to the dude who played Carl Mollis because he did a great job. He was a very interesting character. He basically played this pot-smoking, like, deadhead from, like, the 70s who was just way up on science and shit, and it was really funny to watch.
Oh, man. All right. Yeah, boy.
Dude, he literally wore, like, T-shirts for the Grateful Dead and Doors under his lab coat. Like,
nice.
It was hilarious. Yeah, dude, and I'm being serious. But yeah, so like I said, it was a weaker season, whereas I personally loved season one of Jessica Jones, and I personally would have given it, I think I either gave it a 4 or a 5 out of 5 when we reviewed it last time. I'd probably give this one a 3, maybe at best, 2.5, 3, somewhere in there. Like I said, it doesn't have the same emotional depth, and it sort of meanders in places. But overall, it's a decent watch for the character. It is, I mean, it's head and shoulders above fucking Iron Fist. I'll tell you that, and Defenders and all that bullshit.
That's not saying much.
Yeah, really, it is.
But look, I mean, I would comparing what Daredevil season 2 was to Daredevil season 1, I would say it's an equal comparison between seasons of Jessica Jones, if that makes any sense. Depending on you know,
really,
because. Yeah, I honestly would because, I mean, maybe it's me. I wasn't the hugest fan of season 2 of Daredevil.
No,
I think
no,
season 1 is still beyond reproach.
No, I agree with you, but I don't.
Yeah.
Fair enough. In my opinion, I don't think the drop off was as steep as you're apparently making it. Because if you're saying season 1 was what a 5 and season 2 is a 3, you know, 3 is you know middling. You know, it's midway. If anything, I'd say Daredevil season 1, 5, and Daredevil season 2, 4.2. You know, it drops a bit, it loses a couple beats, but for the most part, I'm still ready and willing for like season 3. Whereas with you, are you still looking forward to season 3?
Which has been confirmed.
Yeah, that has been confirmed. And I am still interested, but only in the sense of I get the sense like. Because Jessica Jones' whole appeal, at least, and it's going to sound terrible, but the whole appeal of her comic book series was the fact that she was such a deeply damaged character that she would just fuck up her own life. And you've told 2 seasons worth of stories, one of which was vastly better than the other, and yet you've concluded that story. So my interest in season 3 becomes, okay, well, where do you take this show going forward? Because it can't be in the same direction you took Jessica Jones season 1. Because that book is closed. You know, unless you take everything away from her, you know, you really don't have another story to tell, I don't think, you know. And I honestly just don't know.
Tell you what it's going to be. It's going to eventually be her and Trish fighting, and Trish dies. Whether she dies by Jessica's hand or dies sacrificing herself for Jessica, I mean, that's a coin flip. But I bet you anything, you know, it's something like that's going to play out in season 3.
You know
what?
I would actually
do that,
that
you
was
know?
I would actually take that bet. Those are smart. Yeah, that's actually really fucking good. Yeah, because then you have Jessica feel responsible for Trish, and Trish tries to do the hero thing, and Trish ultimately dies. And
yeah,
yeah, that
and
would
then
actually
get
put her right back
four,
on track.
Where
yeah.
she's all fucked up again. See, it's a cycle. It's a cycle.
Taser, you know? My friend, there's the reason why we keep you around. And it is not because you are pleasant company, but it is because you
I'm
know
black. Things. And I'm black of the black and black. No, let me stop. I'm not going to go.
He's
there.
Black, y'all. And he's black, y'all. And he's blacker than black.
CB40 was a great movie. Anyway.
But yeah, 3 out of 5. There you go. Mm. So, yeah.
All right.
If you weren't a fan of season one, you won't be a fan of season two. So.
Good. Man, fuck season.
But hey, look. Iggy, now we're done talking about Jessica Jones until season 2.
No, you're not. Because yeah. John liked it. And John will want to do a review of it.
Well, if he can get his raccoon-powered laptop working again, you know, he can come on here and start talking about it. But
that's gonna do it for this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, I usually just talk longer than the time limit, so plug your Facebook crap.
Yes, boss. We are on the social medias at places. I will tell you on Facebook, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel. Excuse me.
Ooh. Oh, here's a message to Mark Zuckerberg. Fuck you.
Do you actually want to fuck him, or was that just an insult?
I mean, if it
Mark Zuckerberg's only into Asian girls, so you know.
But you know, you put a long wig and you know slanted. I'm not gonna say that.
Walk away. We are on the Facebooks at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Check us out there. We are a news aggregator, which means we pull from everywhere, and we are more than happy to provide you the
thieving.
You're a part of the group. What do you want, Taser? Jesus.
I'm just admitting that I'm a digital pirate. I'm just admitting that.
No, you just find things by
your
anyway, we're on the Facebook at the Mighty Warriors Theme Marvel Podcast. We pull news from everywhere regarding everything Marvel. Subscribe to us there, and you'll get news updates. We're also over on Twitter, at Warriors, with WARRIORZ, the number 3. PCast, and we're over there on the Twitters. We post all our new episodes there and retweet news from all kinds of credible sources and whatnot. And you can follow us there for updates. We're also over on iTunes. Feel free to like us and subscribe to us there. You'll get consistent updates of when the episode posts, and maybe leave a kind word and review and rate us favorably. We'd appreciate it. And we are also have our main website where we update the episodes over at WordPress. That's thewarriors3.wordpress.com. It's not much more than us just posting the episodes, but you know, it's another place to find our episodes where we pull the downloads from on the Twitter and the Facebook. So
yeah,
you know, check us out there.
We have like what, over 200 of them. You know, it's a great place to go back and, you know, get more
of the
old
It's our archive, yeah.
Yes,
so.
The archive of lunacy.
Indeed. And that's not even counting all the movie specials and TV specials we've done. You know, they don't count outside the existing episode order. So those are, we probably got a fair bit of shit going. So, yeah, you know, subscribe to us, like us, follow us everywhere you know. You know, we're on the social medias. And Benny Boy will loop you in on his social media stuff. He's got big social media game going right now. So
Do I really?
Twitter.com/blogs. He's a blogger.
Blogger, awesome. YouTuber, other podcaster, whatever. I put free shit out on the internet for you to consume.
Hey, I like free shit.
Everybody likes free shit. That's why the most common fetish in America is poop. Anyways,
ew.
We are the Mighty Warriors.
Quite correct on that. That's actually a true thing.
I mean, don't
we
think
elected
that's
a
real
president
thing.
Who looks like one, so that says it all. Twitter.com/MarvelousIggy. Donald Trump, you can tweet at me all you fucking want. You're going to be investigated anyways. For all things concerning the Marvelous One, anything else? I don't go on Facebook because fuck Mark Zuckerberg. He's an asshole. He steals your data. He knows your dad's not your real dad.
Go on.
That's going to be it, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no, wait. Hold on. Oh. Hopefully, next show, we'll all be back for a certain special thing.
Oh, that's right.
We've all been looking forward to. And hopefully, when we do come back for that certain special thing that we've all been looking forward to, hopefully the other old man of the group will join us, you know, in his sop with camel, you know, of a laptop. John, Fix your shit, dude. This is Taser. Taser has spoken. Fix it. Okay.
Get
yeah,
a new raccoon if you have to. God damn it.
Or get two hamsters this time. Do something.
Get your kids to stand on your laptop with the bunny ear antennas and like wiggle around trying to pick up the signal. I think that's a good way for us to ride out on. So,
send us out.
Until next week, until 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, where we see the Marvel Universe die. Stay marvelous.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
I don't feel fine.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.